It's time to Fade the Chalk.
Fade the Chalk.
Presented by the FTN Network, helping you win your fantasy leagues and dominate in DFS. And now, here are your hosts, Derek Brown and Adam Pfeiffer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to the Fade the Chalk podcast brought to you by the FTN Network. I'm your host, D-Bro, and with me, as always, is Adam Pfeiffer. We are going to dive in to another prospect profile talking about Kyle Pitts today. The man, the myth, the legend coming out of Florida. And to do so, we have brought on one of our main squeezes from FTN, man behind the curtain doing all kinds of fantastic things. We're pulling him out. It's the wizard coming out from Oz, getting him back on the mic, Josh Kalachi. What's up, Josh? Before I intro Adam.
Oh, everybody comes before Adam. We talked about that before and after Eric. There's no doubt about that. I appreciate being on this. Big fan of Fade the Chalk so far. One of the few podcasts I actually get a chance to listen to all the time. I appreciate the introduction. And honestly, I'm very, very excited to talk about Mr. Pitts. He's 5'6". Oh, wait, that's me. Okay, he's a foot taller than me. 245. This guy is going to be a beast. I can't wait to get into it. Derek, Adam, thank you guys for having me on. I'm looking forward to it.
Dude, it's going to be fantastic, man. So much to dive into about Pitts. Adam, I know I've seen your tweets and I've seen your stuff. It's like, it's going to be a good night because I'm watching Kyle Pitts. What are you? I mean, dude, are you ready for all this?
Kyle Pitts is dope, man. Went to Archbishop Wood, which is kind of around where I'm from. So, little Pennsylvania, narrative going there. Selfishly, I wish the Bills were picking inside the top 10, but, you know, they're actually good at football, unlike the Eagles, so they don't have that luxury. Because I would love the Bills to have Kyle Pitts.
I got to get in here. I got to get in. You took a shot. It's unnecessary. I just got to say, you're used to the Bills picking in the top 10. So
I am.
It's okay.
It's weird, man.
The good news is, unfortunately, if the Bills do pick in the top 10, they'll be getting a good player, in which the Eagles have not found in 15 years.
So let's dive into Kyle Pitts here, man, because he's not going to go to the Eagles. What he has done at Florida has been fantastic. 6'6", 246, these are the last measurables that we have on him. College dominator of 91 percentile. He is 96 percentile in yards per reception, and his breakout age stands at a fantastic and beautiful 18.9, which also puts him in a 95th percentile. I mean, Pitts really came into his own, man. In a season where we saw Florida only play 8 games, Pitts balled out. 770 receiving yards, 14% target share. Dude went ham with 12 receiving touchdowns. Kalachi, take the floor here, man. What are your thoughts on his production profile just off the top?
Well, first thing first, you mentioned his age, dominator age. Look, 18.9 is older than Adam, so that is honestly one of the better things I've heard, and has nothing to do with football, just the fact that he's older than Adam. Number two, Kyle Pitts is one of those tight ends that you really do not see in college football. Honestly, you don't see a guy get a chance to even catch the ball, but you see a guy that really should be a receiver. I mean, he lined up in line. He lined up in the slot briefly, thanks to our friend Ray, who mentioned he lined up in the slot 63 times, but had 11 catches. He can play in the backfield. He can do everything except for, well, he can't really block. But we'll talk about that later. The thing for me with Kyle Pitts, and I think the biggest translator for him to the NFL, is very simple. In the NFL, you just have athletes. Their athletes are everywhere. You don't have a 6'6 corner, right? You don't have a 6'6 linebacker. You don't have a corner or safety at 245 pounds, 246 in Kyle Pitts' case. You're going to get a mismatch no matter where you are, okay? And I get, yes, we see that. We see big tight ends before. We see the Jimmy Grahams. We see the Rob Gronkowskis. We see the Travis Kelce's. These guys are big, right? I wouldn't be surprised if Kyle Pitts is a faster player with and without pads than any of those guys. Another step for me when it comes to watching the Florida Gators all year, right? We talked about it in the green room beforehand. We gave the Gators quarterback a little bit of a nickname. Derek, you know what I'm going to say here is Kyle Trash, right? The guy was a Heisman favorite for a while. I think the reason why is because of his repertoire. Kyle Pitts being the number one target for him. Of course, we know about Tony and some of the other players, but there are so many catches on tape where you're like, wow, how did Pitts get to that? You remember thinking back in the day, I know you will remember this very, very kindly, Derek, Zach Mettenberger, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this guy must be great. Well, little do we know, we found out because he had two very good receivers that made him look good. I think we have a very similar case to this one, and that's honestly the number one compliment I can give to Kyle Pitts. If you're a receiver in college, especially a tight end that makes your quarterback look good, that alone makes you a good player in the NFL in terms of prospects. But his production and his breakout age and the fact that he really can play anywhere on the field other than block, in my opinion, is something that's really going to allow him to propel probably the highest drafted tight end we've seen in, what, Vernon Davis?
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it, Josh. Like, I mean, the fact of, like, where they used him, especially if you go all the way back to 2018, he actually wasn't used. Like, he was designated as a tight end, but he was used on the outside on 76% of his snaps. So they only lined him up inside on 6% of his snaps. So the man wasn't even used, even like you're talking about, not even a conventional tight end. Like, he was used more as a wide receiver there. And over the last two seasons, I mean, the man has been playing, and we'll talk about his blocking and stuff like that later in the episode. The man's been playing over 60% in line over the last 2 years. And then where they've used him around the field outside of that, like 14 to 16% outside, 22% in some seasons in the slot, like, he's been mostly an inline tight end. And you look at his production over all of these different alignments. I mean, the guy has got the ability to not only, and we'll talk about some of his strengths later, but, like, he's produced at all levels of the field. Whether you're talking about short area, like inside of 9 yards, 72% catch rate and 5 of his touchdowns. In the intermediate, 60%, 119 passer rating. One of the areas that I think that he improved the most from 2019 to 2020 was his ability to track deep balls. Because in 2020, man, like, he was fantastic. 5 of his touchdowns came 20-plus yards down the field, 142 passer rating. That was one of the things that we're talking about him being used as a weapon at the next level, that I think that we saw an elevation of his game, and not just beating zone, winning underneath, but his ability as a downfield threat, that I really think that is going to translate well to the NFL. And you're talking about mismatches and where they're able to move him around the formation and line him up. I think that it was one of the biggest areas of growth that we saw from 2019 to 2020 that's going to help him out in the NFL. But Adam, what are your thoughts before we get into strengths here? Production, some of his skills, things that jumped off at you from the very beginning when you watch Pitts?
I mean, he's just... body control is ridiculous. Like Kalachi said, like, he made a lot of catches where it's like the ball wasn't even thrown that well and he just adjusted and made a play on it. And like you said, like, we see a lot of these tight ends, like a lot of these tight ends in the NFL, they make a lot of their living just kind of getting into the middle against soft zone coverages. But Kyle Pitts crushed man coverage last year. Like, he was legitimately like I'd be interested to see, like, if he was a receiver, which he kind of is, but, like, if he was listed as his position and played wide receiver, he'd still be a first-round pick. He's that good, and this is a solid receiver class, obviously, but, like, he's just that good. He's going to be a guy that you can move all over the formation, whether it's, you know, in the backfield, in line, in the slot, and how many tight ends do we see that, sure, we'll see some tight ends occasionally move and play on the outside, but how many tight ends do we see in the league that can primarily, if you ask him to, play on the outside? Like, Kyle Pitts can do that. And like Kalachi said, it's just mismatches. Like, okay, you have a corner that has some size. Okay, he's not going to be able to run with Kyle Pitts. You have a linebacker that has some speed but won't have the size for, like, it's just mismatches all over the field. And that's what the NFL is nowadays. You're just trying to get the best possible outcome in terms of matchups. And whoever drafts Kyle Pitts is going to have that luxury because he's that type of difference maker.
And to your point of versus man coverage, man, per PFF, 4.91 yards per route run in 2020. That was the third highest of any player in college.
That's absurd.
We're not talking about just tight ends. We're not talking about just wide receivers. Like, that ability to beat man on the outside is going to separate him and puts him into a whole different box than what you're talking about. That all of, like, we drool over these tight ends when they come into the NFL in fantasy. They're going to be using the slot and able to just beat up on nickel corners and stuff like that, and linebackers. Like, Pitts can do that, and he can beat up on cornerbacks on the outside. Like, it's fantastic, man. So, Josh, lead us off here. Strengths for Kyle Pitts. What do you got?
The strength, obviously, from the very top for me, big, fast, and strong, right? Seems obvious he's going to be in the NFL. Everybody's big, fast, and strong. It's next level for me. We talked about with the mismatches. Big. He's going to be bigger than every linebacker and every corner and every safety he goes against. He's 6'6". Fast. He's going to be faster than pretty much everybody on the field that will defend him, other than maybe 35-40% of the corners he's going up against, who might not be on him because they're going to be on wide receiver one. Strong. 246, right? There's a difference between 246 and 235. And what I mean by that is you see a lot of receivers that get up to 235, right? We saw the Kelvin Benjamins. We saw guys like that. 245, those 10 pounds for me makes a huge difference because you rarely see a receiver at that speed and that size that is also strong. And when I say strong, I don't mean, hey, you can bench press 38 reps at 220, right? I don't mean that. I mean when you see him go up for contested catches, his body is not affected in the air. And we get into a little bit of a football nerdiness here, but for me with pass catchers, one of the most important things is when you're in the air adjusting to the ball, if your body isn't moving too much, one, it's body control, but two, that's strength for me. That's core strength. It gives you the chance to really compete for those one-on-one balls. And we've seen it in the NFL. The best quarterbacks in the NFL throw terrific one-on-one balls, right? Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady this year on deep balls. They have these receivers that have the ability to do that, and that'll lead us to a comparison later on down the road. But I think that a guy like Kyle Pitts, his number one strength is the fact that he's going to be bigger, faster, and stronger. And that obviously leads to his second biggest strength for me, is obviously, which is in contested catches. Adam already mentioned body control. But the one thing I want to hammer home here, you do not see it with tight ends very much, especially in college. His ability after the catch is incredible. I remember there was one play where he took one down the seam. I think it was against Ole Miss, where he caught the ball like a go, but it was right down the seam, right over the shoulder. He had a stiff arm.
Yeah, that was absurd. Right?
And a stiff arm looks great. It looked easy. But when you're running at full speed to be able to stiff arm behind you and keep going, that's important to me. Also, Kyle Pitts had a lot of receptions in bubble screens. There aren't a lot of tight ends in the NFL that can have even the ability to, after the catch with bubble screens. Travis Kelce, obviously the first one you can think of. He gets a lot of tight end screens. He gets a lot of, like, they'll fake the smoke to the left and they'll come back, throw play action screen to Kelce. You can use Pitts in that situation. Once he has the ball in his hands, he's still a weapon. That's not necessarily a thing for guys that are 6'6", 246. It's not. So for me, to summarize this whole thing, biggest strengths, obviously big, fast, strong. We know about the ability for him in space, and we know about the ability for him to make contested catches. And it sounds like I'm gushing on this guy, but, like, watching him at Florida, he's dominating a lot of SEC talent on the defensive side of the football. And the amount of strengths, really, we could sit here and talk for hours. But the most important ones for me, we just mentioned, big, fast, strong, ability to high point, contested catches, and run after the catch.
Yeah.
Adam, what jumped out for you?
So Kalachi made a good point, like, with tight ends and screens, you don't see that. You really primarily see that, and he mentioned Travis Kelce, but, like, with Kelce, majority of those screens he gets are, like, from inside the five-yard line, and you're not tackling him once he gets a half a block from one of the receivers, and he scores from five. He has so many touchdowns like that. Kyle Pitts is somebody you can generate those screens for inside the 20s, legitimately, a lot of the time. And for me, I think the biggest strength, too, is just versatility. Like, Kyle Pitts is somebody in 2022, in his sophomore year of the NFL, that none of us would be surprised if he was legitimately not even a tight end anymore, if he was listed as a wide receiver on the depth chart. Like I said, you can play him at H-back, you can play him in line, you can play him in the slot, you can play him on the perimeter. So for me, it's almost as if, like, even if you're a team that's loaded and has plenty of receiving options, Kyle Pitts is somebody you should still consider drafting. I don't care how many weapons you have, because he just allows you to have that many more mismatches on the field.
Yeah, I love that point, especially because I think that when I watched Pitts, the things that jumped out for me is he's going to be a problem for NFL defenses from day one. He's going to be a red zone weapon from day one. His ability, and because you're talking about, we've already hammered this a lot. What an offensive, like, and that's one of the things. I want him to land with somebody that's creative, possibly, because the ability for him as a chess piece is going to be fantastic. What they're able to do, whether they put him in motion, where they get him on nickel corners, whether they line him up in the backfield, whether they line him up in trips, put him outside. There are so many mismatches that you're going to be able to create with a player like Kyle Pitts, who is going to be able to, he's going to be able to out physical most of these nickel corners. He's going to be taller than most of your outside corners. He's going to be faster than most of your linebackers. Like, I think that his ability as a chess piece is going to be fantastic at the next level. And I just don't want to see him go to some team and then try to make him and force him. Like we saw, like, and it's not a one-for-one comparison, but you saw, like, with Mike Gesicki going into the NFL. We could see on tape that this man couldn't block for shit. And you saw Adam Gase like, all right, I'm going to turn him into an inline tight end. I'm going to ask him to block. Ha, 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 ha. And then he fails in his first year, and you're like, well, I wonder why. Like, Kyle Pitts needs to go to a team, and I hope and pray that he goes to a team, and they're not like, okay, now we're going to teach you how to block, sir. And to get on the field, you need to know how to block. And all these, like, that's not why you draft Kyle Pitts. You draft Kyle Pitts for what he's going to offer your offense and the ability to move him around the formation and be multiple. And in that respect, all of the reasons that y'all have stated as pluses for Kyle Pitts. Like, and we talked about Kyle Trash. Like, he made fantastic catches, diving catches, catches in the red zone where he is contorting his body, falling down, and making these highlight reel catches that you see show up time and time again, and it's just terrible ball placement. Kyle Pitts made that man look a lot better than he is, and that speaks to his talent on the field. Getting into his weaknesses, I talked about his blocking ability or lack thereof on some. One of the things that showed up for me, now if you look at grades, you look at on paper, did he improve as a run blocker 2019 to 2020? Yes. You go and watch the reps consistently in game. He had some games like at Ole Miss. He put some decent like run blocking chops on paper and on film. But you look at the entirety of the season, there's time and time again, and I don't know if it's technique, because I think that he does have some functional strength, obviously, to be able to block at least adequately. But there are times where they've lined him up as a blocker on defensive ends, and you see him blown up. There are other times where maybe it's an effort thing, and it's not. I'm not calling the man lazy, but as far as consistently, because blocking is not something that's going to sit here and get the highlight reels. It's not something that's going to be sexy. But you look at George Kittle, makes his hay. TJ Hockenson, other tight ends in the NFL, that's where they stay on the field consistently. So I'm talking about Pitts. I pray and hope that when Kyle Pitts is drafted, he goes to a team that is not going to try to force him into an inline role at the NFL as the same that he played at Florida, and try to ask him to be what he is not, at least at this juncture of his career. But other weaknesses, like, for Kyle Pitts, I mean, we're talking about all the loves for him and stuff. I mean, outside of blocking and, like, we're talking about other things that are tertiary, I think that some of his route running could be a little bit more crisp. Now, beating up zone coverage and stuff like that, I think he can definitively do that. He is already good enough on the outside. I think his releases are good enough. So, again, talking about areas not so much that I feel like are just like, oh, he's terrible at it, but parts where he can improve, those are the two of the things that stood out to me the most. Josh, what about you, man? Like, what do you think that Pitts can improve on in his game?
Before I dive into the weaknesses, you made a great point about the issue with when you're looking at tight ends and like what Adam Gase did with Gesicki trying to move them in line. 26 teams in the NFL threw the football 56% of the time or more, right? This is an obvious trend Most of these teams are throwing the ball close to 60% of the time, especially when they're down or in neutral game script. The only three teams to throw the ball less than 52% of the time, Tennessee, New England, Baltimore. We all know why. That's how their offensive runs. We know that, obviously, with Tennessee and Derrick Henry, New England ran the ball a lot with Cam Newton, Sony Michel, and, of course, Baltimore's offense with Lamar Jackson. Every single one of the rest of the teams in the NFL are going to throw the majority of the time in neutral game script. There's no need to take a tight end with the athletic ability and with the run-after-catch ability like a Jasicki, like a Kyle Pitts, and force them to block. Unfortunately, you have to block some of the time, okay? And that is my biggest issue with Kyle Pitts. You guys know I'm a big offensive line fan. I coached a position in high school. I really like to watch how guys block. And unfortunately, I think you either have it or you don't. And what I mean by this is you're either going to want to do it or you're not going to want to do it. I think you can be taught the technique. I think you can be taught the right way to do things. And the way that I can back that up is look at Iowa. They have an incredible program there for not only in the strength and conditioning area, but they just know how to block and they're all willing, whatever. If they recruit that way, that's fine. George Kittle, that's how it works. If not, there's still no reason to have somebody block. Now, speaking of the weaknesses, we're going to get into that. Kyle Pitts, honestly, I think he struggles because of his initial punch. And what I mean by this is in college, most of the defensive linemen are 260 to 280 if they're big, 240 to 250 if they're on the edge, right? Not every single one of them going to play professional football, and that's fine. Every single edge rusher in the NFL is good. Okay. Every single edge rusher that Kyle Pitts will be blocking will be the best player he's had to block yet, right? When I watch Kyle Pitts, the number one issue I have is that initial punch in the run game really, really hurts him. And I honestly think get to the fact where he actually hurts himself, because a lot of guys when they're younger are taught to block, hey, put your face mask in their chest and deliver your hands, okay? You do that to a Jason Pierre-Paul, you're going to get yourself hurt, legitimately. My biggest issue with Pitts is his face mask hits first far too often, and that's because his lack of punch with his first strike, okay? You watch these tight ends. Go and watch George Kittle tape this afternoon, guys. You'll see George Kittle wins at blocking because of his hands. His first punch is incredible. It's very strong. He has that ability. TJ Hockenson, same thing. Lee Smith, Adam, I know you know Lee Smith. Yeah. Same thing.
That's right? All he
these
does.
These guys are just good at doing this.
He literally plays because he blocks.
Yes, Lee Smith has a career like 4 catches, but he can block. Okay, you can find Lee Smiths. You can find those guys, okay? They will need to be on the field instead of Kyle Pitts if you're going to line him up in line. I really don't think he has the ability to block at that next level because of the way that he's either been taught or the way that his effort is presented. He doesn't use his hands, and it's hard. I'm not saying it's easy. It's hard. He doesn't use his hands well enough for me to get that initial burst to block at the next level.
Technique thing, or do you think it's an effort thing, or is it a little bit of both? Because again, I don't have an offensive line background, but when I watched it, I saw some of the same things. But I'm like, do you think it's one or the other, or is it kind of a collection of the two?
I genuinely think he doesn't have an interest in blocking. Now, again, that can change. The issue is, will he have the ability and the want and the know-how and the savvy or whatever to do that? And if that's the case, will it be too late?
Are they going to have the patience with him looking like a schmo some of these reps too? Or are they going to get frustrated with him?
Yeah, so that's the whole thing, right? That's why they have to use him like a wall, or they have to use him like a – it goes back to what you said. You need to find somebody that has that creativity. And I'm not saying Kyle Pitts will be the worst blocker in the NFL at tight end. That's not true. There are some guys that are legitimately bad. But I just think that Kyle Pitts legitimately is putting his health at risk because of the way he's currently blocking in the NFL. And I don't want to see guys collide with their helmets first without their hands being right there. That's something that has bothered me coaching pretty much the last 5-6 years. You see it a lot in high school. We see it a lot in youth level. We see it a lot in college. In the NFL, that is going to hurt him. So if he finds an offensive line coach or a tight end coach is willing to work with him, maybe he gets better. But he needs that punch. Without that punch, I do not think he can get there. And you see it. Maybe you've seen some of these, Derek. When Florida ran their RPOs, right,
Mm-hmm.
The second level of the RPO, when you're the guy responsible for letting the edge go, which is most of the time what Pitts was doing, you bypass that first guy and you go to the tight end. Or sorry, you go to the linebacker, right? That's mm-hmm. how it works. That's how the options work. That's how the RPO has worked for a long time. The issue is with Pitts, he looks good on these because he's blocking somebody that is his size or smaller. So if they're going to use him in that light as an RPO blocker to get to that second level, or if they just want to use him as a double team guy, he performed well on double teams. Again, it's hard to not, but the point is he's able to do that. He has a big enough body. He can give that shoulder nudge and get to the second level. The only issue for me is if he's blocking one-on-one, you play against a team that runs a 34, you got to block a five tech. He's not going to be able to do that, in my opinion, but I don't think it has anything to do with his physical abilities. I just think he doesn't have the want to do it, or he hasn't been taught enough to use that first hand strike, and that's something that we certainly need to see from a tight end to block at the NFL.
Well, and there were certain routes, and I'm trying to remember which game I watched versus South Carolina, where there were two red zone plays or multiple short routes where they either lined him up the backfield or lined him up inside, and he could have chipped the defensive end or could have chipped the rusher on his way out, and he just didn't. Now, I don't know if that's all play design or if like he's just like, nah, I'm not about that life.
Yeah, that dip. He shows that dip a lot when he's breaking man coverage too. I honestly think part of that is a design. It looks like when I was just speaking of those RPOs, if he's dipping that initial rusher, you want to let him free to put him in a position of conflict with the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So if it's a handoff based RPO, or if it's an RPO where, you know, when they motion Pitts to the left or the right, and obviously he was in the backfield, and then he would have like a red zone play, he'd be running in the flat. You obviously want to dip that guy to make that a potential conflict for the quarterback to decide. Obviously, Kyle Trask is a little bit slow in terms of getting the ball to these guys, but I think that it is something that Florida actually did a good job of designing later in the season when they used him in the red zone more, not just in the corner, not with fades, not with corners, not with whatever. But it really gave them a chance to take advantage of his size difference. And to those specific plays that you're talking about, I personally got the feeling that was designed where he was ducking underneath. But what's funny is that's sort of the same energy he displays when you know he has to block. I probably counted 5 or 6 times over the last 8 games this year in 2020 where a play would happen, he'd miss a block, he'd look at the sideline and throw his hands up, right? Mm-hmm. To me, that just indicates that an O-line coach or a tight end coach, somebody's yelling at him, which means, is it something wrong? Whatever. I hope this isn't something that takes snaps away from him. And again, you mentioned it earlier. He's by far one of the better weapons in the whole draft. There's no disputing that at all. But if he goes somewhere and they make him block, it's going to really kind of drop his value. And this kind of
time could be benched, like, and all this stuff. Like, I'm not trying to crap on the man. We're not saying that. But we're talking about range of outcomes because we've seen extremely talented tight ends come into the league and be first round, second round, high draft picks, and then falter in their first year in the NFL. And everybody goes, oh, what's the transition and stuff like that. Some of the things, it's also good coaching staffs and what they're asking these players to do. And it's like, if you're entering the NFL and it's like, this shit is just not part of your skill set. Like, it's just not there, man. Like, you talk about, okay, is he good? Is he great? Is he meh at doing some of these things? If you're asking the man to do some of the things he's added 60% of his snaps, that's probably not going to work out too well, especially in the early going of the season. And do you have are you going to give him the leash to learn and to grow as a player? Or are you just going to say, like, go hard nose and be like, well, all right, square peg, meet round hole. You don't fit. We're going to park you on the bench because you're a rook. And maybe we see you play some more down the end of the season or not. I'm not going to say that it doesn't, like, that could not happen to Kyle Pitts in his rookie season. And as a guy, we're talking about him, we're going to get to landing spots. I think that he's going to be a first-round pick in the NFL. And
no doubt.
If he lands with a team that's going to sit here and be like, all right, we're going to ask you to block a crap ton, we could be walking into next NFL offseason and people are like, oh, he was a disappointment. And it's not so much about Kyle Pitts, but a bad coaching.
Adam Gase isn't a head coach anymore, so we're okay.
There are a lot of other dumb out there in the NFL that still do dumb shit with guys that make no sense. That's why we can't assume rational coaching, man.
No, I agree.
That's the whole thing, right, Derek? You're talking about the fits. Talk about the fits. Kyle Pitts is a great receiving tight end, great athlete, okay? Are you going to draft me, Josh Kelce, to reach something on the top shelf? That's not what I'm good at, right? I can't do that. And that's the whole point. And that's all of this. It's all fit. Like last year, it was two tight ends, and the entire NFL had more than 723 yards, right? There are more than two players in the NFL that can catch the football. Evan Engram was grossly misused by the New York Giants. Grossly misused, okay? And this is the issue with tight ends in fantasy football to me is Kyle Pitts, if he goes somewhere where he's going to get targets, instantly a top five to fantasy tight end. There's no doubt in my mind. Yep. Zero doubt in my mind. If he goes somewhere where they want to use the tight end to block all the time, one, it's a poor draft pick. You're not using a guy to his strengths. Two, that's the only time I could consider not taking him in the first round of my fantasy drafts.
Best case scenario is, okay, this team understands what they have in Kyle Pitts, and yeah, his obvious weakness is his blocking, but I just hope it becomes, okay, just play him as a huge slot receiver or play him out wide and let him just run routes because I just, like, we saw a lot of tight ends, like Logan Thomas last year came out of nowhere, obviously not the prospect that Kyle Pitts is, but, you know, huge target, has some speed, has some yak, and is a big target. Like, he, I think, led the league among tight ends in routes run. So if Kyle Pitts can get, like, that type of usage, he's going to absolutely smash. But if, like you said, if he gets drafted by a team, and again, Kelce hit the nail on the head. Like, that's just a terrible draft pick if you're drafting Kyle Pitts and having a block 60, 50% of the time. It's just stupid at that point.
And you see it all the freaking time, man. Adam, any other weaknesses besides, I know we've hammered on his blocking or lack thereof, any other weaknesses that jump out to you about Pitts?
Honestly, not really. Like, that, it's honestly just the blocking. And like I said, I hope it doesn't matter. I hope it's just, okay, he can't block, but we're not asking him to, so who cares? Which I think I would like to give these NFL teams the benefit of the doubt and assume that whoever drafts him, like, I think he'll probably go in that top 15 range in the draft. Hopefully whoever drafts him understands that he's a guy that you just want to throw the football to because he's that damn good. So like I said, hopefully it doesn't matter. But other than that, not a ton of weaknesses really at all. If I had to say anything, like, he's like it's just the weakness could be ending up is who he's around. Like, and it's not even his fault. But if he's around a team that has plenty of pass catchers and ask him to block, then I guess that's a weakness. But other than that, no, not really. I mean, if he's getting the targets, he's going to be really good.
So jumping into this, we've talked about his skill set, pluses, minuses. Josh, what do you think as far as like a floor and a ceiling? Like, who does he remind you of? Like, give me some comps here, man.
So the first comp that actually came to my mind was Mike Evans, and honestly, I believe that because of the mismatch and the obvious ability with the ball in the air, right? So we all remember Mike Evans, Texas A&M, Johnny Manziel. It's another one of these Zach Mettenbergers that we're talking about, right? Manziel had all these great numbers, and you're like, wow, look at what he's doing. You watch Texas A&M when those two were in college together. It was that meme where he says, screw it, Tyreek down there somewhere, right? That's exactly what it was like with Manziel and Evans. And Evans in college, same kind of thing, broke out at a young age, very, very big. I think Kyle Pitts is much has more weight mass, I should say, than Mike Evans. They might weigh in similarly depending on how the pro day goes for Pitts and what he wants to come in at. But Pitts plays much bigger weight, and that's obviously because he's a tight end, right? His floor is not Mike Evans. We know this. Mike Evans is one of the better receivers that we've ever seen for the first 7 years of their career. But I think that was the first player comp that came to my mind. Notice he's a wide receiver, right? The second one that came to my mind is actually Dez Bryant. And the reason why I say Dez Bryant is because we know Bryant's number one strength was inside the 10-yard line, where you knew he had the body control and the strength with the ball in the air that I talked about earlier to win those one-on-one battles. Peak Dez Bryant was one of the best dig route runners we've seen. That is not Kyle Pitts. But Dez Bryant inside the 10, I really think is a good comparison for Kyle Pitts. I honestly think his floor is probably Gesicki. I think that's a great way to put it. I just really, 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 really hope they're not using him in a role where he's not extremely comfortable and he's not beneficial. The whole using me to pick things off the top shelf thing, right? Like, you're not going to use, you're not going to ask Derek Brown to not have energy on a podcast, right? Like, these are strengths for everybody. And that compares him to Mike Evans and Dez Bryant for me. I think another one to look at in addition to Gesicki as a floor is I really think that Pitts, like, it's a cliche, but like he's Darren Waller. Like, yeah. He's they're the same kind of guy. And what's funny is Waller was a receiver in college. Mm-hmm. Ended up becoming a tight end because of the system that they ran at Georgia Tech. Kyle Pitts is a tight end who lined up a tight end, could very, very well be a wide receiver in the NFL that just has TE next to his name.
Yep, agreed. Adam, who did he remind you of?
It's Darren Waller. It's like if you're comparing him as a tight end, it's almost like spitting image of Darren Waller. They're 6'6", 255 for Darren Waller. Pitts is what, pretty much the same size. 6'5", 245, 250. Like, they're very similar. Both can be dangerous in the seam, but also can beat man coverage. We saw Darren Waller play. Darren Waller is one of the few tight ends that we see play on the perimeter in man-to-man coverage a lot and still win. I think Pitts is going to be very similar to Darren Waller. And like Klotz, you mentioned, Waller, former receiver, has that size and converts to tight end. And is, what, the third best tight end in the league right now, probably. So, yeah, for me, it is definitely Darren Waller. I like the Mike Evans comp, too, though, because there is an outside shot that Kyle Pitts, in a year or two, is playing wide receiver and not playing tight end. And if that's the case, then, yeah, he's going to be one of those red zone guys who you throw it up to and could easily be, like, a top five player in terms of touchdowns for a given season. He has that type of potential.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with the Waller comp as far as like a ceiling and stuff like that, especially the tight end position and if he's utilized properly. I think that his floor, and we're talking about his absolute floor, like if nothing changes with his game, if he's used poorly or used inconsistently, I think Gesicki's a good call. The guy that jumped out to me was Jared Cook. That is the tight end that I think that is his floor because his receiving ability is, but you've seen Cook, man, depending where he's gone over his entire career, if they've utilized him, if they've not utilized him, like he has like in his bag of trips, he's had these high ceiling seasons where they've been like, okay, go catch the damn ball, do what you do. And we're not asking you to do a whole hell of a lot else because Cook can't block for crap. So I think that Jared Cook is probably his floor at what I'm looking at. Now, playing outside, and if he plays some receiver, hell, even right now, when I watched his film, the guy that jumped out to me as the wide receiver comp, and I know I joked about this before we turned on the mics and even earlier, the guy that I was reminded of, and people, I still don't give this guy's career enough credit because, well, when you do some off the field stuff and you shoot yourself in the leg, it's hard to not be kind of a joke in some circles. But the guy he reminded me of as a wide receiver on the outside was Plaxico Burress. That was the guy that I saw on film whenever I watched him. And Plaxico, like we're talking about, man, he balled out in the beginning of his career, like ages 24 to 28, five seasons. He had three seasons of 1,000 yards or more, two seasons of above 1,200 yards. I think that Kyle Pitts has the same type of ability and skill set on the outside, contested catches, the ability to be a mismatch. That's honestly the closest wide receiver comp that I had to him. But your thoughts on that, Josh?
I love that comp. Love that comp. It didn't even hit me, really. It's just like he was huge. Like, we see a lot of these big receivers now. Like, we're talking about Plaxico was drafted 20 years ago. He was huge. 6'5", probably 235. Like, that is a great comp. I really like that because, like, this is one of the things that I was mentioning earlier, right? We know that Kyle Pitts is not necessarily a blocker. That's fine. Jared Cook can't block either. If Kyle Pitts entered the draft as a wide receiver, are we having this conversation about his blocking?
No.
Like, no.
You're telling me a corner is going to get through him on a inside zone handoff when he's blocking occasionally? Like, it won't even matter. Plus, he's not going to be blocking that much anyway. Like, he has no shot against a corner.
And that's the whole conversation to me. I know we talk about it a lot. This is a little bit of a cross-sport thing here, Adam. Is in the NBA, a lot of people talk about there's no positions anymore. Mm-hmm. I really think that's the case on offense in the NFL.
Yeah.
We see it with Sean McVay. We see it with Shanahan's offense. We see it a little bit in Baltimore when he's using different guys in the backfield. They have a 300-pound fullback, right? Like, guys play different positions, and it doesn't really matter anymore. The only reason it matters is for fantasy football. And a tight end is extremely valuable if you have a good one. So for me, I think that the Plaxico Burress comp is perfect. I'm looking at it. Plaxico Burress is only 43 years old. Feels like he played 50 years ago.
I know. It feels like he played forever ago. And I think that even Plaxico's career doesn't get enough justification because the dude was good. Really good. He was extremely good at the beginning of his career with Pittsburgh.
Before we go to landing spots, let me ask you guys this, because I think it's interesting. I would love if Kyle Pitts, wherever he gets drafted, is used very similarly to how the Saints use Marcus Colson. Because Marcus Colson was essentially like a glorified tight end, if you remember that. 6'5", 230. He's obviously more explosive of a player as Marcus Colson. But man, if like as kind of that huge slot receiver who could obviously still play in the perimeter, I would absolutely love if whoever drafted Kyle Pitts used him like the Saints used Marcus Colson, who legitimately one of my favorite receivers ever because I had him in fantasy for like 11 straight years. He was the goat.
I mean, the same type of usage you're talking about that. I mean, the easy comp for that is Jimmy Graham. Same type of usage. You know, I think that we're those are really similar usage points, and that's what we're hoping for here. So, Adam. So we're talking about usage. We're talking about first round that we think that he goes in. Where do you see him landing at?
There's a lot of – like, we've talked about a handful of players, and it's been like those same three or four teams for a lot of them, especially the running backs. Kyle Pitts could go anywhere. I think he could go as soon as four to the Eagles if they're moving on from Zach Ertz. And we know the Eagles want to run that two tight end set. They still have Doug Peterson – or they don't have Doug Peterson. They still have Carson Wentz as of now, so we'll see. But – I think that could be the earliest he goes. I probably don't see it happening. But for me, there's four teams for fantasy that I think that'd be great. The fourth would be crazy for real life. The Cincinnati Bengals, I think they want Penei Sewell, but if he's not there at six, I know they need to protect Joe Burrow, and we talked about Kyle Pitts blocking, but they need a tight end. They were force-feeding targets to A.J. Green for most of last season. That didn't work, but like they have their perimeter guy in T. Higgins. They have their slot guy in Tyler Boyd, and go get Kyle Pitts, who is obviously an upgrade over Drew Sample and CJ Uzama. You can move them all over the formation, give Joe Burrow another weapon. The Panthers, if they don't take a quarterback, I mean, they have the weapons, but Ian Thomas, man, he ran 468 pass routes. That was ninth among tight ends last year. He had 20 receptions. Like, he just didn't get open. He wasn't part of the game plan. Kyle Pitts would be a massive upgrade there. And this one's dependent on free agency. The Los Angeles Chargers, if they don't re-sign Hunter Henry. Justin Herbert and Kyle Pitts. And the last one, and I think Klotch is going to love this for real life. The 49ers, that I know people are going to say, but they have George Kittle. We just talked about it, man. Positionless football.
That would be fun.
You put him as an H-back. You put Kittle as an H-back. You put Pitts in the slot. We know how creative Kyle Shanahan is. That's all about Kyle Shanahan's offense, is creating mismatches. How the hell, especially if they somehow get an upgraded quarterback, are you going to defend Kittle, Pitts, Debo, Brandon Ayuk? They're moving everywhere, all across the formation. They're all athletic. They're all fast. They're all talented after the catch. Good luck. That would be really fun. It wouldn't be as good for fantasy because Kyle Pitts wouldn't be, you know, getting consistent targets each week. But for a real-life perspective, that would be interesting at 12 for the Niners.
Ton of sense, especially if you line it up with a lot of the things that you've said, Adam. Dude, the Chargers would be fantastic.
His stock and would go through the roof.
Since you have Joe Lombardi as the offensive coordinator, do you know where he was earlier in his career? New Orleans! He was there when they had Marcus Colston. 07 to all the way up until last year. Like, the usage, I think, could be there. That is the landing spot that I'm screaming for him to land at. Like, I want him to go to the Chargers. Outside of that, I can see Cincinnati, and I know a lot of people have talked about Dallas. I don't see him going to Dallas. I think they addressed their defense with that pick.
Kolachi, what about you?
So I really want the Carolina Panthers, right? So I don't think it's going to happen.
I want the Panthers or Bengals.
Yeah, I think the Panthers will move around. I think they're going to try to move that pick to either move up, or if they get it, they might trade back, whatever. He is a perfect fit for Joe Brady. The reason why, Joe Brady sees, hey, is this player good at this? Yes, okay, I'm going to make him do that. It's not hard. My favorite landing spot now, I'm glad you said the 49ers. Kyle Juszczyk, right? Swiss Army knife for Mr. Shanahan. He's a free agent. They are going to need that role filled by somebody, whether it's filled by Kittle, which you could very well do that, whether it's filled by maybe they re-signed Juszczyk, whatever. That is a very, very, very important part of that offense. I now want Kyle Pitts to go to the 49ers so we can move Kittle to that role, and Kyle Pitts plays the other role. And you can just move Kittle around. If he can play, he can be that H-back that you needed with Juice. You can play Kyle Pitts in the slot. You can play whatever. I don't think that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the quarterback there next year, which means there's going to be a whole new selection of preferences, whole new selection of target distribution, whatever. We know the offense is designed for one read, and if not, you go to the second read. That's fine. But we do know Garoppolo has had tendencies. With a new quarterback, with Kyle Pitts there, this is a dream, but I would absolutely love that. So I'm glad you mentioned that, Adam. I think it's tied a lot to whether or not Juice resigns there in San Francisco. The other one I really like is New England Patriots 15. I don't think that he's going to fall that far, but if he does, Belichick, whoever, you could talk about his love for tight ends. I don't really think that's a correlation. I think they had a chance to find Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez, and you go and get those guys because they're weapons. That is also what Kyle Pitts is good at, right? Kyle Pitts is a weapon. At 16, Jalen Waddle is going to be gone, right? Devonta Smith is going to be gone. Jamar Chase is going to be gone. All those guys are probably going to be gone. Do the Patriots take a quarterback there? Maybe. Do they go defense? Maybe. But I really think that if Kyle Pitts is there at 15, he's that sort of Swiss Army knife type of weapon that you can use. And I think that it would be a good fit in New England simply because he instantly becomes their best pass catcher.
I was going to say, like, simply because they have the worst group of pass catchers I've ever seen. And it really depends. Like, if New England wants to just kind of say, okay, we're clearly not in contention anymore, let's have another year where maybe we kind of – because they didn't tank last year. They brought in Cam and they tried to compete. It didn't work. But, like, I think if Kyle Pitts is there, you take Kyle Pitts, as much as we love Kyle Pitts, a pass-catching tight end isn't going to change your team's hope from, out of the playoffs to a contender. We know that. But it gives them a young player to build around, and then they can draft a quarterback next year. Then all of a sudden, maybe you have, you know, a Spencer Rattler or a Sam Howell, and Pitts is with them, and then you're kind of building. I think that would be really interesting, and as a Bills fan, I'd hate it. But if he's there, I don't know how they pass on him. Like, you have no pass catchers.
Exactly. And one more thing with the Panthers, too.
Two tight ends in the third round last year. I would have to go back and look at it, like, if they're going to run 12 personnel, if either one of those guys are...
Asiasi, I believe.
Yeah. And yeah. Keane.
Dalton Keane, yeah.
That's right. So the only other thing with the Panthers I mentioned earlier is, and we all agree here, if the Panthers need a little bit of help on the offensive line, right, we know that they could use an interior lineman, we know that they could use a quarterback, whatever. There are so many good free agents on the offensive line and pretty much everywhere, and I really want to stress that. I know you guys are probably talking about it in the future on different pods and other pods in the past. This is going to be a different year for free agency, in my opinion, in the NFL because of the cap difference. Everybody was expecting there to be a cap of close to whatever, 219 or whatever it was. If it's closer to 190, you're going to have to make some cuts, okay? And I really think there's going to be a lot of good players that get cut, and these teams that are in the middle, and I put the Carolina Panthers in the middle. I know they had a bad record last year, but I do think they're not that many pieces away. They could go get a quarterback. They could spend some money on some offensive linemen.
There's some good guards in this draft, defense. In this free agency class. Yes. There's some good guards.
So I do think that free agency needs can fill a lot of what people may think may happen in the draft this year, more so than it would in the past, because I do think the class this year is going to have a lot of good players. Like, depending on how the Eagles cap situation looks like, they're talking about cutting some really good players. And I know that's the situation for pretty much everybody. And Derek, I know what Buffalo you're going to bring too. Up with the cap and the Saints is like, not everybody is going to have the ability the Saints have with some crazy magic they do with the cap. And
well, because every team's front office is good. Yeah, like a lot of the front office are just dumb. Like it's just simple. Like
not everybody has a Brandon Bean. I agree.
Well, good teams. Oh my god. Good teams stay good because they're able to do smart things. Bad teams stay bad because they're just simply dumb. I mean it,
that's the whole. It's the truth.
Salary cap being a myth and teams being able to do this, it's because some GMs are actually good at their freaking jobs. Crazy as it sounds.
You have other teams.
Do you like Howie Roseman?
$38 million cap hit on the quarterback they're going to trade for a second round pick, probably. And the Eagles are going to have no quarterback. They're going to draft a quarterback at 6. They're going to draft a quarterback in the second round. And all I'm going to be wanting is for somebody to sign Brandon Scherf. Why can't we get Scherf? Why? We got 12 quarterbacks making $90 million.
Dude, it's true, though, man. And we talk about the salary cap, and we all kind of like – there are just some teams that know how to massage it, and they're skillful with it, and some teams are just not. So we talk about some teams that kick the can down the road. Like, everybody's been talking about the Breeze stuff. The Saints are still going to perform their backflips. They're going to be fine. I'm not worried about that at all because it's just a fact. They are going to sit here and perform magic and restructure contracts and do whatever the hell they need to do, and they're still going to put a contending team on the field. That's going to happen, and there are other teams that are just simply not. I want to revisit the Panthers fit really fast because I think it's a really sharp call. And the more I've had time to kind of percolate about it, I really like that because, Adam, in previous episodes, we've talked about Robbie Anderson's got a contract situation. Like, he could be gone after
Curtis
next
Samuel's
year.
A free agent.
He's getting old. Exactly. We're talking about what this offense looks like not only in the upcoming season, but the season's moving forward. Robbie Anderson not being there. We know DJ Moore is going to be. And who could be the first or second pass catcher in that offense? And Kyle Pitts could fill that role, man. He could play both inside and outside. He could be a chess piece for Joe Brady. We saw even going back to LSU, did they have the most athletic tight ends? No. Did Thaddeus Moss's butt have a huge integral role, especially in the red zone, from the hilt? Yes. So the more I've had time to kind of sit here and the wheels just turn, I like the Panthers fit. I really, really like that call a lot.
Yeah. Panthers or Bengals for me for fantasy would be the best for Kyle Pitts. And I think for like a real life matchup, just like perfect storm, it would kind of be San Francisco. And a lot of people would say, but they have George Kittle. That's fine. Positionless football. It's cool.
And I'm on Chargers and Panthers. I think Panthers are my number two. But if somebody asks me, where's the top spot you want Pitts to go? I'm going to say the Chargers for me. Kalachi?
My top spot's still going to be the Panthers. I agree with you there. The one point I wanted to echo home, and the last point on Pitts to the Panthers, when Joe Brady came into the NFL, everybody thought, oh, you know what? They're going to do the same thing they did at LSU, right? They're going to throw the ball everywhere. They're going to spread it out. A sign of a good coach to me is somebody that uses their personnel to their advantages. Mm-hmm. Joe Brady did that last year. We saw fullbacks touch the ball, right?
Yeah.
I don't think a fullback played a snap for LSU in 2019, right? He had Ja'Marr Chase. He had Justin Jefferson. He had Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He had Thaddeus Moss. He had Terrace Marshall. They all were there, okay? They don't have that in Carolina, so they're not going to try to replicate that offense. Maybe if they get that personnel, whatever. They might try to replicate it then. Doesn't really matter. The whole point is I truly have faith in Joe Brady using those guys to the maximum strength and using them to what they're good at.
It's what he did with Robbie Anderson last year. I completely missed on Robbie Anderson with the
did it with Curtis Samuel too.
Yeah, like,
well, some context there. I thought that they were going to play the opposite roles. I did not see DJ Moore playing the field stretcher role. I don't know about you, but I got the roles wrong that I thought they were going to play. I thought Robbie was going to be used as a field stretcher, and that's not just because that's what he did with the Jets. That's what I thought his skill set like leaned itself more to, because I think that DJ Moore was a better route runner. But now we saw that it was obviously, I mean, we were all wrong. Like, at least I was, and I'll own that.
Yeah, I was wrong too, because I didn't even think Robbie Anderson would be like viable in fantasy, and he was very good for the first half of the year because he was running a lot more slant routes, a lot more intermediate stuff, and that just tells me that Brady is going to put these, like, it's all he did at LSU, it's all he's going to do in the NFL. He's going to put these talented players in position to make plays. So if they draft Kyle Pitts, I guarantee you Joe Brady's not going to be like, all right, Kyle, let's get used to blocking. Like, no, he's running routes with Joe Brady, guaranteed.
That's a great point, because we have hammered this entire episode about hoping that he lands into a spot where a coach is going to say, oh, these are the things you do, and I'm actually going to utilize that. I'm going to accentuate that. We're going to feature the things that you do well, because that's what a good coach does. So I love that fit. I absolutely do. All right, everyone, that is the draft profile, the prospect breakdown for Kyle Pitts. Again, need to be heading over to @ChalkFade on Twitter. Check out the timeline. We are going to be dropping all of these prospect profiles days, weeks heading up to the NFL draft, as well as we are giving away a signed Calvin Ridley jersey. Two easy steps to get entered. Head over to iTunes, give us a rate and review, DM a screenshot of said review to the Twitter handle, and you are entered to win. My phone is blowing up right now. We are getting tons of reviews. Once we hit 200 reviews, we're going to give this thing away. It is going to be out the door. So we're going to be back talking more prospects in the days to weeks to come. For Fade the Chalk, we are out.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Fade the Chalk with Derek and Adam. Make sure to follow your hosts and the podcast on Twitter at @DBRO_FFB, at @APPfeiffer24, and at @ChalkFade. Smash that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode.